Excellent. Ah, reinforcements. Okay, excellent. Hello, Lai. Nice to good morning, everyone. Nice to see you again. Yeah. Sorry. That's wonderful. Yeah, great. Okay. Okay, everyone. So let's carry on. Wait. So I have to share the screen, is that right, Bobby? Huh. Okay, I've got too many things open here, not sure what I have to do now. No, one second. So-and-so, yeah, everyone has a teacher in the world, but very few people take the Buddha as a teacher. Yeah. If you ask someone, who is your teacher, nobody says the Buddha. Have you noticed that? That just doesn't happen. Yeah. And this is a big mistake in the Buddhist world. It's a big mistake because all teachings that we have in Buddhism, they only have value insofar as they relate to the teaching of the Buddha. Yeah. If the teaching you hear relates in the right way to the teaching of the Buddha, then it is a valid teaching. Yeah. Then it makes sense. So everything needs to be seen in relation to the Buddha, because the Buddha is the one who started the Buddhist teachings. Yeah. If the Buddha didn't understand, if the Buddha got it all wrong, well then we don't have any Buddhism. So the Buddha, we have to assume the Buddha knew what he was talking about. So this is the most important teachings in all of Buddhism, are the teachings of the Buddha. And that is why it is very useful to go back to the original source and actually understand what the Buddha himself taught. So this is kind of the idea behind these kind of retreats, to try to understand, unravel, if you like, get an appreciation of how the Buddha made these teachings available to the world. And that is what I'm hoping to do, and please keep me to that. And if you think that I have a misunderstanding, because obviously when I teach, I'm going to add to the word of the Buddha. So if you think that maybe I have misunderstood, or maybe you think there is an alternative understanding, you're very welcome to say so. And then we can have a discussion about these teachings. Yeah, I'm not going to get upset if you disagree with me, I promise. So you're very, very welcome to have to disagree with me if you wish. Then, kind of coming from that, hopefully we will gain a better understanding of what these teachings are all about. This is kind of the purpose behind this. This particular retreat is called Practicing Like the Buddha. Is that what I call it? Something like that? How to Practice Like the Buddha? Okay. Idea behind this is that one of the things that you find in these suttas of the Buddha is you find the Buddha talking about his own life, his own practice. And especially he talks about what he did himself before he reached awakening. And these suttas, actually quite a large number of them, especially in the Majjhima Nikaya, you find the Buddha talking about how he was thinking before his awakening, how he was thinking while he was still living in lay life, what were the motivating factors that made him renounce the household life and become the Buddha? That is very interesting. What motivated the Buddha? I think this is a very interesting thing. And this is where we get into the ideas about, things like the Bodhisattva and right intention, and all of these kind of issues arise out of that. And so there's lots of suttas about the Buddha talking about his own life, especially before he became the Buddha. And the reason why the Buddha is talking about these things is because he wants to inspire us. He wants to say, this is how I practiced, because I practiced in this way, because I am a human being, because I also have weaknesses. This is what the Buddha says, which I'll see this later on. He also has weaknesses that are very similar to the weaknesses that we have. Not the Buddha, but the Buddha-to-be, before he became enlightened. And because this is what I did, you should be practicing in the same way. And this is a very important part of the idea of the Buddhist teaching, that when the Buddha teaches and when he talks about his own life before his awakening, he is a human being just like us. He's not a god, he's not some kind of cosmic principle. A lot of the ideas of later Buddhism, where the Buddha gets elevated way in the wrong kind of way, everything becomes miraculous, everything becomes over the top. All of that actually detracts from our understanding of the Buddha. The Buddha was a human being, and that is why his teachings, his way of exposition, his very practice before his awakening, all of that is relevant to us. If the Buddha was fundamentally different from us, then these teachings would not really be relevant to us. This is a very, very important point. And so we're going to look at how the Buddha himself practiced before his awakening. That's the idea behind this series of talks, and it's going to be around the idea of the Noble Eightfold Path, because everything in the end comes back to the Noble Eightfold Path, and I'd like to look at this from all kinds of angles. This is going to be the Noble Eightfold Path from the angle of how the Buddha to be practiced this path. So this is kind of I always try to kind of come up with some slightly different idea just to make it interesting. If I do the same thing every year, I don't know if would you get bored, or would you still be okay? Some people still okay, some people start yawning, same old, okay. It's going to be the same old this time as well, but from a slightly different angle, just to have you warned, so you know what's going on there. And if you do find that, I should also say at the beginning, if you do find that you get really bored and you think that this monk, he says the same thing every time, yes, please. Zoom by audio, what do you mean here? I haven't done the audio. Okay. All right, thank you. It's a good thing that we have people who can look after this. Excellent. Thank you so much, Ang. Remember that the idea of coming on a retreat like this is to enjoy yourself. Please enjoy yourself. It's so important, because Buddhism should be something that actually enhances the quality of our life. when you come to meditate, when you come to listen to the Dhamma, when you come to all of these kind of things, make sure that you have a good time. Yeah. If you think this is too boring, please walk out anytime. Yeah. You're very welcome to walk out. I'm not going to write your name down. I don't know your name anyway, so it doesn't matter. And because it's about relaxing and having a good time together, being with the Buddha, the Dhamma. It should be uplifting. Yeah, we should be good about this. And if you feel tired, it's natural. You all have very busy lives. If you feel a bit tired, you want to take the afternoon off, please take the afternoon off. Please take the morning off if you want to sleep in. I don't care at all. To me, the most important thing is that you enjoy yourself. If you enjoy yourself, I will enjoy myself. If I enjoy myself, you will enjoy ourselves. Let's have a good time together. That's kind of the background behind this. And then hopefully we'll be able to learn something. You learn something when you are relaxed, right? You know that famous saying of Ajahn Brahm. Ajahn Brahm likes to tell many jokes. Were you here when Ajahn Brahm was here in December? Yes, some of you were. Okay, not everyone was here. So this is kind of Ajahn Brahm saying. Ajahn Brahm, I don't know if this is just an excuse or whatever, but this is what he, Ajahn Brahm has many, I don't know if it, I should say he has an excuse, but... unmute, okay. So now unmute. Okay. So, idea here is like what Ajahn Brahm says, that he says this as like a Tibetan saying. Yeah? The Tibetan saying is that when you make people laugh, and when their mouth is open, you throw in the pillar of wisdom. Huh? You know that? This is kind of the other. And it's true, right? Because when you laugh, you're relaxed, you're at ease, you're enjoying yourself, and that's when you are open to take in the Dhamma properly. Huh? So very important to actually find that sense of relaxation. And this is one of the things I love about Ajahn Brahm. Ajahn Brahm is very informal. Yeah, he likes to kind of for everyone to have a good time and enjoy themselves. And that's one of the things I try to follow myself. So if I get too serious, tell me off. Yeah, too serious. Okay, no good. So please, this is the way I like to do things. So on that basis, now let's start to have a look at these particular suttas. And as I said, it's going to be basically based on the idea of the Noble Eightfold Path. From the perspective of the life of the Buddha himself. And I'm just going to do the important business of pouring the coffee. priorities. Maybe you think this is craving. This is good craving. I'm just letting you know. There's good craving and bad craving. And so because it is based on the idea of the Noble Eightfold Path, the very beginning here, we're going to start to look at the idea of right view. Yeah, what is right view on this path? And we're going to look specifically about how the Buddha-to-be, how he gave rise to right view, right understanding, and then from that, how the path unfolded. This is kind of the idea behind this. And this first sutta we're going to have a look at is known as the Ariya Pariyesana Sutta, which translates into English as the Noble Search. Yeah, so the Noble Search sounds quite nice, doesn't it? Noble Search. I don't know. Some of these words in the Dhamma are actually very, very powerful, evocative words. They're like noble, for example. Yeah, there's something very beautiful about the idea of being noble. Noble is something elevated. Yeah. Of course, nobility of the heart, not nobility of external things. And that's something beautiful about that. Anyway, so I'm going to, as I usually do, I'm going to read out a little bit. And you can see it on the screen over there. You have the English on the left side, and then you have the Pali on the right side. So we can refer to the Pali quite easily. This is taken from the website called suttacentral.net. And this is where you can format the text almost exactly the way you like. You can either have just the Pali, just the English. You can have Pali English together. You can have Pali on top, or English on top, Pali underneath. You can do all these kind of things. And then you have tools that help you translate the Pali. There's all kind of stuff available on this website. And it is becoming the world's number one website for the suttas. So very, very beautiful and powerful website in that way. So this is what how this goes, and this is a story, or the not a story is the wrong word. This is an occasion where the Buddha has gone to the monks. The monks are hanging out at the hermitage, and the Buddha has gone to them, and he because he has been asked to give them a talk. So he comes, and then he says this to the monks. He says, "Good mendicants, it is appropriate for gentlemen like you, who have gone forth in faith from lay life to homelessness, to sit together and talk about the teaching. When you're sitting together, you should do one of two things: discuss the teaching or keep noble silence." So the Buddha has just had a chat with them, and after having the chat, he says, "Good mendicants." Mendicant is a word. I don't know if you're familiar with this word, mendicant. The word mendicant is like an old-fashioned English word, which means someone who depends on alms. Someone depends on the generosity of other people. And in that sense, it is very similar in meaning to the word bhikkhu or bhikkhuni. Bhikkhu or bhikkhuni also means someone who depends on alms. So very, very similar in that sense. So it's a very appropriate word, even though it is a bit old-fashioned. And then he says, it is appropriate for gentlemen like you. Gentlemen, doesn't that sound a little bit too like modern kind of English, like people are going back to England or something? But the idea here is that the Pali word is actually kulaputta. You can see the word kulaputta there. And the word kulaputta means someone in ancient India who kind of came from a good family. These are people from good families. And gentlemen, or gentlewoman if you like, these are also about people who come from good families. People who are polite. People who know how to treat others in the right way. People who have a sense of idea of how to live in the world in a positive way. That's like a gentleman or a gentlewoman or a gentle person, if you wish. So it is kind of appropriate. And it's interesting how this word is used, the idea of kulaputta, because in a sense it is what it means. It's like the Buddha, in a sense, is praising them a little bit. Says, you gentlemen, you good people. And he's already kind of saying something positive to get the attention of the monastics in the crowd. You are gentle people. You are good people. He's reminding themselves of the good qualities inside of them, in a sense. And this is a very important thing to do. When you give a Dhamma talk, you want the audience to be relaxed and at ease. You want to remind them of their good qualities, so that when you are reminded of your own good qualities, you will try to live up to those good qualities. If people tell you off and tell you that you're all bad people, what, you only keep 5 precepts? You should keep 6, 7, 8 precepts. You should all be novices, What do you mean you're lay people? You know, get ordained, or whatever. But that's kind of the wrong approach. The right attitude to deal with people is to remind them, actually, you're doing really well. You have good intentions. You're trying to practice in the right way. Good on you for doing this. Good on you is like an Australian expression, which means like, well done. And then when you see the positive in other people, then actually you tend to encourage those qualities in other people when you see the positive. And this is almost like what the Buddha is doing here. Listen, you are good people. You have done the right thing. You have done something difficult. You have gone forth from good families. You're not kind of the bottom of the hierarchy in society. You're already at the top, and still you have gone forth. What a wonderful thing that is. And this is one of those things that I think is very important in the Buddhist teaching, to remember that it doesn't matter which part of society you are from. It is not like the Dhamma is only for the kind of people on the bottom of society. They don't have any hope anyway. They might as well become monks and nuns. It is not like that. The point of the Dhamma is that it is so profound. It is for everyone. It doesn't matter if you have a double PhD and you have been the Prime Minister and the King of Malaysia. Still, you should become a monk. Maybe we should invite the King of Malaysia to become a Buddhist monk. What do you think? Is that gonna work? No, wrong religion, right? Okay, so let's not do that. let's kind of keep out of trouble, as they say here. So, but the idea is that it doesn't matter what your background is. It is always worthwhile to become a monastic. And it shows to me, you know, when people say that, you know, oh, my son and daughter, they are a doctor, they are a lawyer, they're doing really well, they should make the family proud. We don't want it to become a monk or nun. That's the last thing we want, right? What that shows me, they haven't really understood what the Dhamma is about. If you have a son and daughter who is very successful, who is very bright, who is very intelligent, who has all the good qualities, that is specifically when you should encourage them to become a monk or nun. Yeah. Because they are the ones who can make a difference in the world. They are the people who can express the Dhamma, who can articulate the Dhamma in such a way to make it meaningful for the whole world. They can become a great benefit for themselves and for others. Would you rather have your son and daughter to become like the new Buddha or the new Ajahn Brahm, or like them to become some kind of doctor which gets forgotten straight away? What would you prefer? Yeah, the idea is if you can help a large number of people in the world as well as helping yourself, that is the greatest thing we can do in our life. So I'm always very happy when I hear Buddhists who say, yeah, I want my children, yeah, or even my husband and wife, please become a monk or a nun, yeah. When I hear that, I think, yeah, you have really got it. Well done. And that is what is the right attitude, I think, for a Buddhist. It means you understand what the Dhamma is about. This is where happiness is to be found. This is where meaning is to be found. Real meaning in life is to be found on the spiritual path. So the idea of kulaputta is a very important, is actually a meaningful thing. And I think gentleman, or maybe gentle person, would have been a better way of putting this, because it also includes women as well. And that would be the right way to think about this. So, yeah, it's appropriate for a gentle person who has gone forth in faith or out of faith from the lay life to homelessness. Yeah, so here we have the idea of faith. You don't just go forth from lay life into houselessness or homelessness, but you do it for the right reason. There's many different reasons for going forth. Yeah? One reason is that you are a no-hoper. You are a loser in society. Actually, Ajahn Brahm says being a loser is great. Yeah, losers are the best people. The more you lose, the better it is. Let's say you have no hope. Yeah, you have no intelligence. You're not intelligent. You can't get a job. And kind of your parents are kind of despairing. What are we going to do with this? All my other sons and daughters, they are really bright and sharp. But this dum-dum here, don't know what to do with them. Okay, go forth. Yeah, become a monastic. Yeah. And that is kind of not a very good reason. And one of the things that you find at the time of the Buddha, people became monastics for all kinds of reasons. Yeah, how to just have enough food, yeah, so we can just really relax and enjoy ourselves because we have all these illnesses and the Buddha has a good doctor, so we go forth just to get rid of the illnesses. And these are all reasons why people went forth. But actually the real reason to go forth, the real reason actually is powerful and fruitful and gives rise to great results in the future, is if you go forth because of faith. Yeah, the Pali word is saddha. This is the right reason. So, what does it mean to go forth because of faith? What is this word faith, this word saddha? You can see saddha there in the Pali on the right-hand side. What does this word actually mean? And this is a very important word on the Buddhist path. And it has two fundamental meanings. And I was arguing with Bhante Sujata whether we should translate. Bhante Sujata is the translator of this one. You may never have heard of him, but he is a monk. Yeah, he's out there. He's a good friend of mine. Some of you have heard of him. Yeah. And should it be translated as confidence, or should it be translated as faith? Yeah, they go forth out of confidence in the teaching of the Buddha, or out of faith in the teaching of the Buddha. And the question is, what is the difference between confidence and faith? And the answer is that both of these translations are correct. Confidence is correct and faith is correct. But there is no really acceptable English word that actually captures the idea of saddha fully. In the suttas, we often talk about this idea that when you have faith, you have what is called Dhamma Veda and Atta Veda. And Veda, this is a word that means something like inspiration. It means both the fact of understanding the teaching, but also the fact of having an emotional connection to the teaching. What does it mean to be inspired, right? When you are inspired, it means that you understand something. Wow, this is really cool. I understand. And you feel inspired by your understanding. But inspiration also has an emotional component to it, right? When you are inspired to have to do something, you feel like an emotional sense of uplift. You feel good, you feel positive. Inspiration is a very beautiful quality because it combines understanding and emotional uplift together. And this is the idea of saddha. When you have saddha in the Buddha, you have confidence because you understand these teachings. You know that they apply to human beings. You know how important they are for your life, for your happiness, because you understand what is going on. So you have confidence that this really makes sense. Yeah, the Buddha is saying something sensible here. Yes, we have defilements. These are problematic. This is how you overcome these problems. This is how you purify yourself. Purity leads to happiness. All of these things start to make sense. Welcome. Please. And when you start to see that these things make sense, and you start to feel that they apply to your own life, then you also feel the sense of uplift. You feel inspired. You feel that you are the idea of faith in the sense of feeling joyful and glad because you have come across something very profound and something beautiful. This arises together with the confidence and the understanding here. Yeah? So you have the faith side, which is the emotional side of this, which lifts you up, which gives you a sense of joy and happiness on this path. And then there's the confidence side, which is the understanding side. And this idea of faith in Buddhism is very unique to the Buddhist teachings, because very often in the spiritual world around us or the religious world, usually when we talk about the idea of faith, it means like just following something because you have faith. It doesn't have anything to do with understanding at all. You just follow along, you believe in God. Why? Well, you just believe in God. That's all, you know. It doesn't have to make sense. Actually, sometimes it's better not to make sense, they say. And to me, that's kind of crazy. How can you not make sense? That's kind of really an awful idea. But in Buddhism, it's actually the opposite. In Buddhism, the idea of faith and confidence go together. The more confidence you have because it makes sense, because you know it applies to your life, the more inspired you are, the greater is the emotional connection to these teachings. And when you gain that emotional connection, that's when it becomes powerful. Yeah, because then you start to reflect, as I was saying before, how fortunate I am to be here with my Kalyanamitas, how fortunate I am to have these marvelous teachings of the Buddha. And then you feel joy also in your meditation practice. And that joy that you feel in your meditation practice, well, that is precisely the thing that aids the meditation and makes the whole path come alive. So saddha, going forward because of faith, is such an important thing here. And so this is something that we should all try to develop in our life. Yeah, develop this idea of saddha, because this is what will drive the process of meditation, drive the path forward. So we're going to, looking at the idea of right view, and the idea of right view is very closely related to the idea of faith and confidence and saddha. Yeah, because when you have saddha, when you have faith and confidence, then of course you also take the ideas of the Buddha seriously, the idea of right view. So you have confidence in the teachings. You look at the Buddhist idea of right view because you have confidence. You reflect on those things. You contemplate them carefully. And as you do that, this idea of right view gets established within you as a consequence. So faith is a very important foundation for right view to arise. So how can we give rise to faith then in these teachings? Yeah, just to give you some very brief ideas about how faith comes about or confidence comes about. Now, one of the very important things is to do what we're doing now. Yeah, coming here, listening to the word of the Buddha, seeing if it really applies. What does it mean in my life? How does it actually give more meaning? How does it give rise to happiness? How does it give rise to the overcoming of suffering? All of these things are a very important part of this. So as we do this, as we go through these teachings, I hope at the end of these 5 days, you will have more faith, more confidence than when you started out. If you have less faith and confidence after these 5 days, I will have failed. Please don't allow me to fail, right? I want to succeed. So then we're going to be on the right track. So please try to understand these teachings. Start to understand how, what they mean for your particular, in your particular situation. And as you do that, then this idea of faith will arise. Then, as you start practicing these teachings, and you continue to study them, the more you understand how they apply to your life, how you practice them, the more faith and confidence is likely to arise. So keep on reflecting. Keep on listening to Dhamma talks that are based on the sutta, that are conformed with the way the suttas are spoken. Practice the teachings in the right way. And as you do that, gradually this confidence will start to arise. And this is the right way to deal with this. So, time is going fast. So let's just do, the idea here is not to talk too much on my part. Let's just do a little bit of meditation. It's kind of just to allow things to sink in a little bit. And we can do a few questions afterwards, and then we'll just carry on. Okay. All right. So, and usually at this point, I would like to give you the opportunity to ask some questions, if you like, or make some comments about what we have been doing so far. So please feel free to ask or comment or whatever you would like.
If you'd like to ask questions, please raise your hands. We'll pass you the mic.
Good morning, Achan.
Hello.
Hello, my name is
Bodhi. Yeah. Ah, there you are. Okay, good. Yeah. Trying to find you. Yeah,
with regard to Sadda.
Yeah.
There is some term like unwavering confidence.
Yeah.
Is that a sutta like Chanki Sutta best explain about how to arrive at unwavering confidence?
Yeah.
Can you explain more about that, if yes?
Yeah. So the idea about faith or sadda is that it grows over time. Yeah, and the idea is that and this is kind of interesting. The more right view you have, the more wisdom you have, the more the faith and confidence grow. They go together, because if you see that the teaching of the Buddha works, if it gives rise to the results that it says, obviously your confidence is going to become stronger, right? So faith, insight, right view, wisdom are all sides of the same coin in Buddhism, which is kind of very interesting. It's very unique to the Buddha's teaching that these things are actually basically the same idea. I think it's almost unique in the religions of the world that these things are revolve around the same thing here. And then there comes a point when you have the full insight into the teaching of the Buddha. That's what stream entry is about, sotapanna is about, yeah? When you see the teaching fully. When you see the teaching fully, that's when confidence becomes complete, yeah? Because you know that this is, because you have the same insight, you know that what the Buddha taught in the suttas must be correct, must be true. Because you have the full insight, your confidence becomes unwavering. Yeah? You know exactly what is going on. That is another way of talking about stream entry. Because you have seen the reality, you have full faith, full confidence. So when your wisdom reaches the pinnacle, when your right view reaches the pinnacle, confidence and faith also reach its pinnacle. That's why it's called unwavering. It reaches the kind of maximum point. It actually goes beyond that, but that's when it becomes kind of solidified, if you like. So that's the idea with unwavering confidence. In the meantime, our job is to keep on increasing it until it kind of reaches that, to that point, basically. Yes, please.
I have a question to ask. Regarding sadda.
Yeah.
Now, there are explanations using the word faith, and you have added another one called confidence. I have also heard of an explanation using the word devotion.
Devotion?
Yeah. So, it's devotion a right term to use, or is it just another explanation?
That's right. The thing is that there is no right term. There are just different translations, and all of them, many of them are pointing to something that is true, part of the truth. And so sometimes when you read, I know that when you are reading the suttas and you see different people giving different translations, sometimes you feel really, you give up. What is true? I want to know the right one. Yeah, I don't want to see all the different ones. I want to see the right one. But actually, once you get used to the sutta, you should be very happy that people translate it in different ways, because it gives you different angles on the meaning of the Pali. Yeah, especially when a term like sadda, which is quite a complex term and quite difficult to capture with one word, when you see different angles, it actually gives you a more complete understanding of the term. So devotion is true. Yeah, it is also a good, it's also an appropriate translation, because devotion has to do with the heart quality. Yeah, it has to have to how you feel inside. And if you bow down to the Buddha, or you bow down to the Dhamma, and you bow down with a heart full of confidence, you can give rise to joy. You can feel so happy just bowing down to the Buddha. And that's a beautiful thing to do that. Because that is actually becomes a power in your meditation, in your whole practice. Ajahn Brahm tells the story of, this is a story, I think I told it here before, but it's a story of, he was dreaming. I don't know how this is possible, but this is what happens when you're like Ajahn Brahm. Yeah, not possible for ordinary people, but for Ajahn Brahm possible. And he said he was dreaming, and in this dream, he was bowing down to this monk who he respected a lot. And because he was bowing down to this monk who he respected a lot, he felt so much joy. Yeah, and that joy was so powerful that kind of he started to go into samadhi in his dream. And because samadhi has so much happiness, he just woke up. And as soon as he woke up, the mind was so incredibly bright, bang, straight into deep meditation straight away. Yeah? And this is kind of the idea of devotion or having a sense of faith, that you feel so happy to be in the presence of such powerful and beautiful teachings that you feel overwhelmed by joy and happiness. I mean, usually people in the world, they feel joy and happiness because they have some kind of promotion in their job or they have a new girlfriend. Yeah, a new girlfriend. Wow, so happy. It's nothing, right? It's small beer. The real happiness in life comes on the spiritual path. I mean, it's nice to have a nice girlfriend, a boyfriend. I'm not going to kind of be too kind of stupid monk kind of person. It's nice, but it's still small thing compared to what is available on the spiritual path. And that is why, that is where the real powerful joy can arise as a consequence. And that is why devotion also is one angle on this idea of sadda. So, yes indeed. So thank you for bringing that up. Yes, please, fire away. Yeah.
I just want to know.
Yeah.
You see, you were saying you think meditation is just as though it's resting the armchair. But what are technique you use for this meditation? Should we just concentrate on our breathing, mm-hmm. or should we concentrate only on positive thoughts?
You should concentrate on relaxing.
Okay.
Because I'll expand on that a little bit, because it is a very important point of meditation practice that people don't usually quite understand. And that is that very often people go to the breath too quickly. Yeah, this is something that you learn in certain meditation techniques, certain meditation ways, is that you sit down, you go to the breath straight away. Please just take it over here. Yeah, you want to come on this side? It's easy for you. You can just you can work here. I can talk over here. Yeah. And so you are told, you go to a meditation center and you're told, sit down, watch your breath. Yeah, but this is actually wrong. And this is wrong not because I say so, because the Buddha says so. And when you look at the sutta on the mindfulness of breathing, Anapanasati Sutta, what the Buddha says is that he says that you, first of all, you go to an empty place, yeah, a quiet place. So meditation is always about going to a quiet place, first of all. This is why you go to a meditation center, where you have your own room, you can kind of be more secluded, you get out of your ordinary environment. Yeah. Then he says you set your body straight, Ujjunkayang Panidaya. So you have your body straight, because when your body is straight, basically you get more clarity of the mind. Actually, first of all, he says that you sit down, right? So meditation happens when you sit down. Put your body straight, and then he says, and this is a critical thing, he says, Satting Parimukkang Upatapetva, which means having established mindfulness in front. Yeah? So the idea in meditation, yeah, all of this are the preliminary things that you do before you do any meditation. Yeah? Before you watch the breath, before you do anything at all. So you establish mindfulness first. If you start to watch the breath before you have established mindfulness, it is impossible to really watch the breath in a relaxed way. Why? Because if mindfulness is not there, it means the mind is going to be want to think, the mind wants to be have sloth and torpor, the mind wants to do all kinds of things, but it doesn't really want to be present. Mindfulness is the definition of presence, so you have to have it first, not afterwards. Then you can watch the breath. And this is why I say, in your meditation, first of all, relax, be at ease, find the happiness of sitting here so that mindfulness can arise. When mindfulness has arisen, that is when you should be watching the breath, not beforehand. That is how you follow the instructions of the Buddha in the Anapanasati Sutta. Most people make the mistake of going to the breath straight away. That is not really how the Buddha teaches this. So get the sequence right. When you get the sequence right, you will enjoy the meditation. Get the sequence wrong, you will not enjoy the meditation, because to be able to watch the breath, if you have no mindfulness, you have to use willpower. When you have you have to use willpower, you will feel tight. You will feel the mind feels not comfortable, not relaxed, not at ease. And then eventually you get this famous samadhi headaches. Yeah, you have people having samadhi headaches, very famous. And that is a very bad idea, to get samadhi headache. Why? Because it's very hard to unlearn that behavior, and can be very difficult to get rid of those headaches if you keep on doing it for long enough. So do the sequence right. Enjoy, relax, allow the mind to become peaceful, guide the mind very gently. You will have heard I said using the word nudge during the meditation. Nudge means a very gentle application of the mind, very, very gentle. You just remind yourself, okay, wow, I'm here with the BGF, all of these good people around me, the Buddha's teaching is here, yeah, we're in the presence of the Buddha, this is really inspiring, yeah, we're doing good things together, yeah. All of these beautiful people coming here, yeah. And then that inspiration, that happiness, together with the relaxation, allows the mindfulness to come. Then when the mindfulness comes, then you watch the breath. I mean, this sounds very easy when I say it like this. You have to experiment a little bit to understand exactly how this works. It's going to vary a little bit from person to person. But this is essentially how the Buddha teaches meditation in the suttas. Am I making any sense at all? Yeah, are you sure? Yeah, okay. If I make no sense, please let me know. Venerable, I don't understand anything of what you say. Please. So that's okay as well. All right, one more question here. Yeah, last one.
Good morning,
Ajahn. Good morning.
Yeah. Thank you. Could you kindly repeat the website that you were mentioning about the Pali translation, please? I think I've missed that.
SuttaCentral.net.
SuttaCentral.net. Sure.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, that was a very nice question. I like that kind of question. Straightforward. No. So yeah. All right. So this, maybe I should highlight the words I'm talking about. That's a good idea, like that, so people can see. That's good. Okay, so let's carry on a little bit, because we have only done one sentence of the sutta so far.